Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast, the show that helps you take back control of your well-being one small, powerful step at a time. I'm your host, Nikki Robertson, and in today's episode, we're diving into something that so many people silently struggle with, back pain. But not just the kind that comes from lifting something heavy or sleeping funny. We're talking about the kind of pain that builds up over time, often linked to stress, emotional tension, and the all too common habit of spending most of our lives sitting still. You see, chronic stress doesn't just affect your mood and sleep. It can literally reshape the way your body feels and functions. Combine that with a sedentary lifestyle and you've got the perfect recipe for persistent back pain. To help us unpack all of this, I'm joined today by someone who truly understands the intricate connection between the spine, the nervous system, and overall well-being, Dr. Darren Subiran. Dr. Darren is a chiropractor with a deep passion for spinal health. He brings a wealth of clinical experience and a compassionate approach to understanding not just the symptoms, but the story behind the pain. In our conversation, we'll explore how stress shows up in the body, why movement is medicine, and what simple effective steps you can take to support your spine and your health starting today. This is a conversation you don't want to miss. Dr. Darren, you weren't always a doctor of chiropractics. In fact, when I read your bio, you started off in banking. What led you down the road to changing your career trajectory?
So I think it's a bit interesting. I was a chiro first and then studied finance and MBA and stuff and then moved into corporate. And I think the thing for me is that at some stage, I always wanted to understand the business side of, I suppose, healthcare and about business in general. Mm-hmm. But what I realized working in corporate is this thing that, you know, lots of people who work on a daily basis are suffering with back issues in corporate settings. It's the chairs you work on, the hours, the stress, all of these things. And so it became something that sort of reignited that sort of passion I had to help people, is understanding the stress, the pressures, the dramas that come with normal day-to-day 9-to-5s. Mm. And that was one of the reasons that I moved back into treating again. So I think it's a unique thing in that I've sort of lived both lives. I've been in the corporate setting. I've worked hard. I've done the time. I've, you know, had the targets, the stuff you need to do and the pressures. But at the same time, I've also come with the background of the chiro and the medical. And I think that those two work well together. So I've had a very interesting perspective or life journey, but I think it helps a lot in understanding my patients better, because a vast majority of my patients are actually guys who are corporate guys, working under high pressure, dealing with stress, and they don't realize the contributing factors of stress and how it affects their bodies. So it's definitely something that I've noticed, and I think it helps a lot in dealing with patients more holistically, I suppose.
So, you know, a lot of people think of physios and chiros and even orthopedic surgeons in terms of when you have an injury, you go and see a doctor, obviously. But what would you, you know, you mentioned stress, and when you say stress is a factor in back pain, are we talking not just physical stress, but the emotional, mental side of the stress conundrum or quadrant as well that's contributing to pain? Yep. How does that work?
So I think there's a couple of studies that have come out recently which are very interesting in this space, and they've been looking at stress and back pain and the correlation between the two. And what these studies have basically found is that, first thing, individuals who have more emotional stress actually have a higher perception of pain. So what that means is, let's say your pain normally is a 5 out of 10, but when you are under immense stress, whether that be emotional stress, work stress, pressures, or whatever it may be, you will actually experience that pain at 7 or 8 out of 10. So the first thing that we're seeing is that the more stressed you are, and that's mainly emotional stress that we're looking at, you actually experience your pain at a higher level. We also see that stress plays a role in what we call inflammatory markers in the body. So the more stressed you are, the more inflamed the body is, and the more likely that you will develop or experience a back issue or an inflammatory issue in the body. Now, if you have an underlying back issue, let's say that your back gives you issues now and then, when you are more stressed, you are more likely to then experience that back issue. And another component of stress that's really interesting is a component of stress affecting our muscles. So what we find is people who are more stressed are generally more stiff and tight. So they have stiff muscles, stiff body, and that's more of almost like a defense mechanism to protect the body. And as a result of that, that will put strain on the body. So if you are stressed, your body might be more stiff. And then when you do your usual activity, whether it be lifting weights, running, exercising, that may then trigger an injury in the area. So what we're starting to see now is that stress plays a big role in back pain, whether the level of experience of back pain, but also the development of back pain as well.
In your practice, when people come to you, are you seeing a lot of sedentary people with these kinds of pains and aches?
I think there's a combination. I do see a lot of sedentary patients who come to me, but I also do see a lot of very active patients who come to me. I think that patients who are more sedentary, you do see the pattern slightly different. What you're going to see there is it's related to the activity they do a lot, which is usually sitting for
Okay.
prolonged periods of time. So you'll see with them that they sit for a long period of time and they usually get achy, stiff, sore throughout the day, usually later in the day. My more active patients, you're going to be seeing most of their back issues are related to activity. So they'll say, look, I did a heavy workout yesterday and it sort of flared up. So what you're going to find is that in different profiles, you're going to get different types of back pain or different presentations of back pain related to different activities.
When I see clients come to me for mostly for nutrition, especially older, not even older people, it could be anybody, and they say, well, I don't exercise because I have an injury or I have pain, but not exercising is also causing pain. How do we get out of that self-perpetuating or self-fulfilling loop of not moving equals more pain equals not moving more? How do we break that cycle?
So what I say in that is it's a great question because it's something that I deal with a lot where people come to me and say, look, I haven't exercised in 10 years or I don't exercise at all. What I do is I generally will start them with something simple, usually something like walking, because for most people, they're able to walk. And what I do is I scale a walking protocol where we start with very short, intense bursts of walking, 2 to 3 minutes, and we slowly and incrementally increase that up to about, let's say, if we can, 45 minutes walking 3 times a week. So studies have shown that if walk 3 times a week at about 45 minutes, your risk of lower back pain is significantly, or chronic back pain is significantly lower. And at the same time, you are less likely to have an aggravation of your issues. So it actually strengthens your core, protects your spine, and is actually almost like a medication for your back. So what I generally start with is walking. Once we get to a certain level of walking, then we can introduce specific exercises. But the idea is that you need someone, or the way you do this is that you need to do it in a way where you don't further injure the area, where you are creating space on the area where the body remodels, strengthens, gets stronger and stronger and stronger, but doesn't go so much that it causes it to collapse. So it's a fine line. It's not an easy thing to do, but from your question, you're going to start with very simple movements, pain-free behaviors, and build them from almost like someone who's been in a wheelchair needs to learn how to walk again. Slowly, 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 bring them back up to competency again. Obviously, monitoring that process. This process can take months, sometimes even years, depending on how bad the issue is, but about slow and incremental improvements.
Yeah, and then I think that also goes back to what you mentioned about emotional stress and, this perpetual stress is movement is one of the best ways to counteract stress because it creates endorphins. So you're working at that sort of what triggers the pain on many, many levels just by moving. And maybe we need to just change the word from exercise to movement just to get some people coaxed into moving more.
Exactly. And another thing that people don't realize is that movement is like a medication for your body. So movement has so many benefits like you've spoken about, but also from a spine perspective, it causes more spinal flexibility. It strengthens the muscles around the spine. It prevents injuries if you don't have them. It manages or can mitigate injuries if you do have them. So it's a very, very important behavior. And many people, when they're injured, actually think that they should do the opposite. So most people say, let me pull back from activity. Let me stop moving. Let me sit and do bed rest for 2 weeks or a week or whatever. But that's actually the wrong thing to do. And so a lot of people have the wrong perception in that they think that moving is negative or will make their problem worse. But in many cases, it's vitally important to prevent the issue becoming worse.
So to that point, you referred to in your when we prepared for this recording, you referred to the World Health Organization's list of recommendations, and it was quite a pleasant surprise to see that these recommendations are moving away from painkillers and they're moving away from support braces and even ultrasounds and all these funny gimmicky therapies. Why do you think these guidelines have progressed and changed over the last couple of years?
So I think a lot of, if you read the entire document, it's like a 300-page document, what you'll find is that the panel that put together the findings and the recommendations looked at research from around the world and looked at what was working and what wasn't. And what they found is, let's, if we talk about medication firstly, if we talk about the medication component, what they found is that the risk of dependency, overdose, and opioid addiction, that kind of stuff was very high. And so in that perspective, they said, look, we don't recommend going in that space because the fear is that, you know, the US is a good example of there's been significant issues related to opioid use and opioid addiction. In terms of a lot of the other sort of things, they basically looked at what is a better way to assist people who have chronic back issues. And what they found is that just therapy is not the full solution. We need to address this from a more multifaceted, holistic sort of approach. We need to look at the mental health side. You know, someone who's been in chronic pain is struggling and will obviously be in a difficult place given that they usually are struggling, they're in pain, they're unable to do the things they were able to do before. Also, they need to be educated. I know a lot of patients who come to me who've been to many other practitioners, doctors, surgeons, people like that, have no clue what their issue is. They don't know the problem, don't know what they're doing wrong, they don't know what they could be doing better, they don't know what options they have. And so education is a huge part of this, these guidelines. Self-care and advice is huge as well. You know, I see patients every day who come to see me with back issues, and one of the questions I ask them is, tell me about the all the things you do that make your back pain worse and your back pain better. And most people have never thought about that. They just, okay, my pain, I get back pain. If I tell them, do you get it when you sit? They go, no, not really. Do you get it when you're walking? Yeah, it might worry me here and there. By creating a list of those things, we actually create an understanding of that individual's problem and their back and what their body wants and doesn't want. And we can then create a plan. This is something that not too many people do. And these are things that are recommended by these guidelines. So I think the WHO is starting to look at a more sort of multifaceted approach to managing back issues because it's such a big issue globally. And up to now, the approach that we've had where it's just therapy, 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 and then once it gets really bad, you need some kind of surgery or some kind of surgical intervention, not solving the problem and not allowing people to manage their issue on a daily basis. So I think that's why they've gone with that sort of approach.
I love that approach where, you're actually giving a little bit of control back to people when you feel like you are steering your own car, for want of a better description. You feel like you're being more proactive. It's very, very important in healing.
So one thing that's very important that I talk to patients about a lot is we're in a partnership in working with this issue. So I think a lot of people usually give over their problem to someone and say, this is my problem, can you fix it? When I work with patients, a big thing is we're in a partnership. So how can I help and assist you in your goal? Your goal is to be pain-free. You've got the problem, you're struggling with the pain. I want to be a facilitator that can assist, but you're going to also need to be a partner in your progress and you need to help out where you can. So I think that works really well.
That works across the board, no matter what we're dealing with, is if you are owning your situation and taking action. So many people listening, unless they've been to a chiropractor, possibly don't have an inkling of what actually chiropractic is or what you do, why this type of therapy is part of a treatment protocol. How would you describe chiropractic to someone who's never seen a chiropractor before?
Yeah. So I think this easiest way to look at it is chiropractors mainly focus on dealing with spinal and bone health issues. So if you were to look at it, mainly we deal with joints, mainly the spine. Chiropractors in South Africa will study for 6 years before they become a chiropractor. So it's a quite intense study. You'd have to do the full sort of basic medical foundational work for the first 3 years, cadavers, dissections, anatomy, learning pretty much every bone as well as every muscle in the body. In the later years, you start learning specific conditions of the spine, and then you learn obviously the therapy treatment component. The main focus of chiro is to use what we call a natural approach to managing and healing patients who have back issues. So, the patient who comes to me, I'm not going to be recommending medication to them. In general, we're going to be doing hands-on therapy, and we're going to be doing different forms of therapy to try and help that person get out of the situation they're in terms of the pain or the issue they have. We use different types of techniques. So there could be the spinal manipulation, which is the clicking, popping of the spine, which you see a lot of on social media and things like that now. But then there's also other techniques. There's techniques like soft tissue massage. There may be dry needling or acupuncture work. There's different types of therapies that we'll use in a session, and that depends on the patient. The basic idea, though, of Cairo is a simple philosophy. It is that your body has the ability to heal itself. However, we need to create the right environment and we need to do the right things to allow the body to heal itself. So that is the main foundational sort of idea of Cairo. And then each practitioner will have slightly different views or slightly different approaches, but in general, hands-on therapy to assist people with back problems in general. But also, I deal with a lot of knee, ankle issues, elbows. It just depends on what the mechanical or musculoskeletal issue is.
So does Cairo, when you say like dry needling, acupuncture, does it tap into meridian therapies?
So I think with us, Cairo doesn't tap into acupuncture. So acupuncture and dry needling sit as two modalities that you use the same apparatus, but you do them with two different approaches. So in dry needling, which is what chiropractors work on, we focus a lot on putting an acupuncture needle into a knot of muscle effectively. So if you have a tight knot in your shoulder, we'll place the needle in there. And according to the research, that'll create an inflammatory response. It'll cause the area to become inflamed. It'll cause the area to remodel, heal, and get better. So that's what we were up to do. In terms of the meridian therapy, that would be more what an acupuncturist does. And that's something I haven't really studied myself, but it is something that many people get better from as well.
Just, as an aside, what do you think the role of, say, sugar, alcohol, inflammatory foods play in dealing with and experiencing chronic pain?
So this is an interesting one because I know you're obviously in this quite a bit with the dietary and nutrition factors. And I think there was a study done recently that I looked at where individuals changed their lifestyle. So they had chronic back issues and then they were asked to change their lifestyle, or part of the study, they changed their lifestyle, and one of those measures was diet. And they got rid of a lot of inflammatory foods in their diet, and obviously then exercised, decreased stress levels, things like that. And what was found is that individuals significantly decreased their overall back pain. And we don't know exactly which one it was or how it worked and which the what the percentiles were, but there seems to be an important component to foods that inflame the body. Stress that inflames the body, exercise that inflames the body, and our experience of pain. So I definitely, from my perspective, believe that there's definitely a component of this that's important. I think there hasn't been significant research on it as yet. It's very new in terms of an idea, in terms of people doing research on it. But if we go back to like the old school, I mean, I come from an Indian background. If we go back to the old school idea of things like turmeric and ginger and different spices, which were used as a medicinal way of managing these conditions, I think there definitely is merit in it. And I definitely do see it in patients as well. Patients who generally have better diets, look after themselves more lifestyle-wise, have a better lifestyle, generally respond better to therapy, and usually have less severe complications from back issues that I see in practice.
Again, I think it goes back to taking control of the whole picture and really like taking control of your health as a whole, not outsourcing it to someone to, give you a quick fix. Are you seeing an increase in back pain in younger people?
Definitely. And this is not something that I'm just seeing in practice. This is something we're seeing in research. Something that's really interesting that's coming out is we're starting to see individuals developing, let's say, degenerative changes or let's say arthritis is a common way to understand it in the spine at much younger ages. We don't know the exact reason for this yet, but there are a couple of theories. The first one is related to our lifestyles. What we're finding is that people nowadays are spending far more time seated than in years previous. So whether that be for their jobs, whether that be commuting to their offices, or whether that be their recreation time, most people are sitting in front of the TV when they're resting. So what we're noticing here is that there seems to be more sitting. We're also seeing less activity, exercise in general. So people are more sedentary. We're seeing less activity. We're seeing less activity even in their jobs. Most people's jobs don't require them lifting heavy boxes the whole day. Most of the time, they're sitting in front of a computer. And then the other thing is lifestyle diet. And we're starting to see, obviously, effects of that as well. So definitely, I'm seeing children coming to me in high school, teenagers with back issues, with postural issues. I'm seeing a lot of teen, 20 to 30 year olds coming with like degenerative changes in the spine. So we definitely are seeing an increase in prevalence, and that's seen in research all over the world.
So, and just more on that topic, excess weight. Now we all know excess, the more you weigh, the higher your percent body fat, the harder it is going to be to get around, to move. It's hard on your knees, it's hard on your joints. From a back health perspective, how does excess body fat or excess weight play a role?
So I think there's a thing that we need to look at here, which is excess weight, and then the compass, the other side is the strength on that side to manage that weight. So what we've found with people is your spine and your back generally has support around it, which is going to protect it. In your lower back, it's your core. You have your stabilizing muscles along your spine. And the idea of those muscles is to stabilize, protect, and also assist in movement and things like that. If a person gains weight, so let's say they put on 10 kilos or whatever it may be, what you're going to find is that stresses the system a little bit more. So that means that those muscles that are doing their stabilizing job are put under strain. This can, over time, lead to more stress moving on to the actual joint. And eventually, depending on the severity of the issue, it's not in every case, but it can happen that you start to develop changes in the spine themselves, degeneration, arthritis, things like this. So what I noticed is that obviously, from a mechanical perspective, the more weight that is put on the spine, the more load, the more stress on the system. And that can create trauma down the line. Obviously, though, it doesn't mean that it has to. If you are strengthening your body, doing exercise and strengthening the body while you're also increasing weight, the body then can sort of calibrate, but it doesn't always do. So it does play a role, and it is something that we also have to talk about when I deal with patients as well. It's definitely something we discuss.
Because along with excess weight comes inflammation and all of these other issues that you spoke about earlier. So, yeah, it is. It's definitely, and it's hard. It's hard for people who work 8 hours a day and they're sitting in a chair because they have no choice, and they don't have an education around what to eat, and they don't. Well, they perceive that they don't have time to exercise because everyone does have time, because even 10 minutes of exercise will make a big difference. You don't have to spend an hour in the gym.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, what do you advise people who tell you they don't have time to exercise?
I get this a lot. So when I'm making recommendations to any patient, I usually give them a list of things to do, and one of them is always some level of exercise. And I probably every day will get feedback saying, "But look, I'm busy, I don't have time to exercise." And my simple thing is, you have two options, or there's a couple of options. One thing, do exercise with a loved one. So go for a walk with your spouse or your, friend or whatever it is. And what happens is that then it doesn't become exercise, it becomes an activity. And it's an activity where you just happen to do exercise. So that's one thing. The other thing for people who say that they don't have time, I usually tell them, look, you can find 5 minutes in a day or 10 minutes in a day. I don't know a person who can't find 5 minutes. But also, I say, try and do your exercise in front of the TV. Most people are watching an episode of something on stage in the day. So I said, okay, cool. Just do it in front of the TV. Put a mat down in front of you, and you need to do this exercise, that exercise while you're watching an episode. You can carry on. I'm not gonna ask you to do 100 sort of sit-ups or burpees where you can't concentrate. Usually it's some sort of static on the bridge or a plank or something to strengthen their core. And that can easily be done while you're watching a 20-minute episode. So for me, there's always a way to find a way to do some level of exercise. It's just you have to get that out of your sort of your head. You mentally, a lot of people are like, oh, to make the time to go to the gym, to drive there, to sit there, it's cold. That's all difficult. But if you say, let's do this at home, let's do it while you're watching an episode of TV, and then what you'll find is that becomes a habit. So every time now you watch an episode, you're going to want to do your exercises because you're so used to doing it, and you've been doing that for the last 2 months or whatever it is. So for me, there's, like you say, a lot of times people come with excuses about how difficult things are, but if we break it down and make it really simple, most patients can find 5, 10 minutes a day.
No, of course. And if it's important to you, anything that's important to you will find a way.
Exactly, 100%.
Then on the other extreme, what kinds of exercise are you seeing? And I'm just thinking off the top of my head is CrossFit, but sorts of, heavyweight training, CrossFit, extreme marathon running, trail running, but like huge distances. What are you seeing in your practice that would be counterintuitive to somebody suffering with pain?
So I think the first thing that's interesting is that my January and Februarys are really busy in the practice with people who have New Year's resolutions to lose weight and have been doing far too much exercise for their level of tolerance or their capacity. I think the important thing to look at is that for me, any activity or exercise is good so long as it's within your ability or your capability. So what I find with most people is that they push themselves a little bit too far. And that may be in any form. It could be individuals who want to train 6 days a week instead of training what they used to train 4 days a week. And that intensity or that increase from four to six is now putting strain on their body. It could also be the activity. CrossFit and things like that are very focused on hitting a specific goal or number, but not listening to your body. So I always tell patients when I'm
Right.
working with them, especially when they have a back issue, we're not focused on hitting a number here. We're not focused on hitting 20 reps. We're focused on doing each rep correctly and listening to your body through the process. We don't want to have a situation where, yeah, great, you hit 20 reps of that, but now you have a back issue or you injured yourself and now you can't train for the next 2 to 3 weeks because you need to recover. So in terms of this, I wouldn't say that there's one specific type of exercise, but in general, I find that people are pushing their bodies harder than they should. And as a result of that, they are creating either micro damage or they're injuring themselves acutely in one issue. And that then leads to a cycle where they're like, no, you know what? I need to train this week. So I'm just going to push through the pain. I'm feeling stiff. I'm feeling tight. Let me just keep going and keep going. And then eventually it becomes a bigger issue where they can't train now, sometimes for months. So for me, that's a big thing that I pick up in practice.
Right. So for someone listening to this who's sitting with an ache, could be a mild ache, it could be a crazy ache that's driving them nuts, and they haven't taken action. And this is, I'm guilty of doing this as well, because we think tomorrow I'm going to wake up and it's going to be fine, and it never is. How can you help somebody just by listening to the show today, understand the source of their pain, and then how to find the appropriate practitioner to help them heal and get through this?
So let's start with, I think, the beginning part, which is understanding your problem. I think a lot of people who come to me, they instinctively know a lot of what the issue is, but they just haven't been able to sort of compartmentalize it or put it down in words and understand it. And that's where I think I come in a lot, is that most patients who come to me, when they're talking to me, they usually are telling me their problem and they know their issue and what the problem is and what they need to do to solve it, but they haven't had someone put it together. So what I usually say to patients, when you have an issue, whatever it may be, start at the beginning, take out a piece of paper and write down every time you experience this issue, what activity you do. So it might be sitting down and to standing up. It might be sitting on the couch for longer than 15 minutes. It might be sitting on the couch instead of sitting on a chair. I want you to create a list of all of these things. What that basically does now is it gives you an initial blueprint of things that you should be doing more of and things you should be doing less of. Effectively, what you're doing is you listen to your body. Okay. What you're going to want to do is you want to eliminate the activities that aggravate the spine or the back, and you want to do more of the activities which don't aggravate it. And you want to do that in the short term for the first week or two. And what that effectively does is desensitizes the area. So if you imagine, if I take some sandpaper, rub it on your hand, it's going to be very sensitized and irritated. And then whatever I do with your hand, if I rub my finger on it as lightly as I want, it's still going to be sore because it's so sensitive. If we can decrease the sensitivity in the area, you're going to find that your pain will initially decrease. So that's going to be step one. Next thing that you need to do is you need to most likely get assessed to understand further exactly the severity of the issue. Some conditions you need to see a doctor or medical professional immediately. Other niggles you might be able to manage at home through what we call self-care, which is basically things like I like heat therapy for all of my patients. I ask them to use a clean bag, heat bag, hot water bottle, place it over the area for 15 to 20 minutes, 3 times a day. Also, movement, walking is very important. It's recommended to pretty much every patient I deal with, that we want to get a nice walking protocol in and starting simple. I have some patients that can only walk 10 steps, 5 steps. We start them with 5 steps, we build them up eventually over time to being able to walk quite long distances. So walking is huge, heat therapy is huge, and then understanding the problem is huge. When I look at these kind of things, what I find with most people is that they haven't really analyzed the issue well enough, or they don't really understand themselves, the back issue well enough, and they need someone that can help them with that. And so when you look at any practitioner, whoever you're going to, you want someone that spends the time to understand your problem. You want someone who does some kind of assessment or test to figure out, okay, this is what the issue is. You want someone who gives you feedback and tells you the problem. So, look, this is what you have. This is what is going on with your body. Yeah, let me show you what this means. And then you want someone who says, okay, now we know what you have. What is the plan to address this in the long run? How are we going to solve this problem? What do you do? What do I need to do? What therapies or type of therapies do you need? And how are we going to get to a solution? Because a lot of people want a short-term fix, but unfortunately for most people who have chronic back issues, it's very rarely going to go away in a week if you've had it for 5 years. It's going to take time, it's going to take a plan, it's going to take implementation of a plan. And if we can do that, what you'll find is that you'll see a significant improvement. So those are the big focus points. You want someone that understands the problem, asks the right questions, spends time to understand. You want someone who assesses you, figures out what's happening, tells you the problem, educates you. what the issue is. And then you want someone who comes up with a solution or a plan as to how this is going to be addressed and how that needs to be done for your specific case. That's what you need to be looking up, in my
Yeah,
opinion.
and it's tricky to find that person because not all
Very
practitioners,
difficult.
not all practitioners think this way. So I always say to my clients, find a doctor or a practitioner or a therapist who you can have an honest conversation with, who you can really be completely transparent with. And I think that's the first and most important step to succeeding with anything in life, but definitely when it comes to our health. So what would your recommendation be to somebody when they are, okay, I've got this problem. Who should I go to? How do I find the right person? Where do they start?
So look, it's not the easiest thing, and it's a difficult question to answer because everyone gets their recommendations in different ways. So I think the old school way used to be someone who had a problem referred you to someone else, or maybe your general practitioner who you trust refer you. I think now what we're seeing a lot more is people are looking at reviews on social media and Google, things like that, and seeing who fits well with them. It's interesting. I have sometimes patients who come to me and say, I read the reviews about your practice and I thought you'd be a good fit. And I find that really interesting because in some way it seems like the personality of the practice or the way we work is coming through in our reviews. And it sounds a bit counterintuitive, but it is something that we notice in practice. So I think it depends on the person what type of referrals work best for them. Some people like to get referrals from an individual. Say, listen, my friend told me you're a good person. I need to go to you. And other people are more like, I want to go into sort of social media, read the reviews from other people who have gone to you and see whether this is the right fit for me. So I think it really is person specific. But what I would say is, you really need to do your homework when it comes to looking at the right practitioner or professional to help you. Because, a lot of times I see patients who've come to me, they've gone to other practitioners, and in many cases, let's say they've gone to a chiro, they didn't have a great experience with them. And then they say, look, chiro doesn't work for me. I don't know if it's that chiro doesn't work for you, just may not be the right approach for you, for your problem. So it really is important to find someone who's a good fit for your specific issue and also your personality as well.
No, I agree. It has to be, you have to have a personality fit, and that's true for all of our relationships. So, Dr. Darren, where can people find you and how can they get in contact?
So I think a couple of ways. The first thing is we have social media channels on Instagram and TikTok where I post videos every week or so about different issues related to back health and education and educating people about their back. So that's under Dane Fern Chiro, the same as the practice. And then in terms of the practice, we practice out of Dane Fern, which is in Fourways or Midrand Fourways area. And we are based here in Dane Fern. So we practice out of there if someone needs a consult with us directly. But yeah, I'd encourage anyone, even if you're not looking for or you don't really have a back issue, to go and follow us and look at the stuff on social media because I think it's very informative and it's helpful for a lot of people out there, whether you have a back issue or not, just to learn more about your body, your spine, important stuff to bear in mind. So that's generally where you can find us.
Prevention is better than cure, always.
Always,
But thank
always.
you so much for your time today. I'm hoping this reaches the right, in fact, I know it will reach the right ears. And keep doing what you're doing. It's really, really important. Thank you.